entirely attributable to really trying to understand how to become the best practitioner of these incredibly powerful social media tools that have given me this life that I never thought I could have. My advocacy and my message are about the power of transformation. It's about owning your story. It's about the courage to be vulnerable. It's about the innate capacity that we all have to not only change, but to tap into reservoirs of potential that are lying dormant. It's about performance. The fact that I was able to do 5 Ironmans on 5 Hawaiian islands in under a week at age 44 on a plant-based diet speaks to this sort of untapped reservoir of potential that I think we're all sitting on top of, because I don't consider myself to be anything special. And that feat is really just a metaphor for the sorts of things that we all overlook in our own lives that perhaps we should pay more attention to. In September 2017, Rich completed the Eau-Thalo Swim Run World Championship, considered one of the most difficult endurance events in the world. During Eau-Thalo, which means island to island in Swedish, competitors swim and run 46 miles across 26 islands in the Stockholm archipelago. It took Rich and his teammate almost 11 hours to finish, 3 hours behind the winning team. In an interview with the New York Times, he confessed the race was the hardest thing he had ever done. But he also added that the experience validated one of the most important messages he frequently shares with his followers. The main thing is realizing that even if you feel terrible for a while, that's not how you're going to feel the whole time. Things change if you just keep moving.
4. What's stopping you? Align all 8 of the essentials: intent, authenticity, passion, patience, speed, work ethic, ability to track customer attention, and master social platforms and content. And you have the closest thing to a formula for crushing it that I can offer. Yet, I know that even a so-called formula won't be enough to get some of you into do mode. Every day, I meet people who swear they're going to start their own thing. Most won't. I ask my team to give me a list of the most common reasons they've heard, whether in the comment sections of our content or in their interactions with other aspiring entrepreneurs, for failing to crush it. Here's what they came up with. I have a full-time job. I don't have any money. I have kids. I don't have time. My industry has too many strict rules. I have an idea for an app, but I don't know how to code. My parents don't get it. My family is holding me back. I'm afraid my friends will get ahead of me. I still haven't finished the books assigned by my life coach. No one was watching. Only a few people were reading. I don't know which idea to pursue. I don't have the right equipment. I don't know where to start. I'm too old. I'm an artist, not a business person. I'm not into anything that's monetizable. I'm afraid I'll get hate comments. Every one of these is bullshit. And some belong in the category of, are you fucking kidding me? The life coach one makes me want to punch my own face. Of the hundreds or so finalists we considered before cutting the list of crushing it contributors down to the ones we included in this book, only a handful were bringing in more than a moderate income at the time they decided to go all in and crush it. Many were flat broke or barely making ends meet. Several had young children, and others were old enough to be grandparents. A number had already failed at previous attempts in building businesses. At least 3 had served jail time. You can write these examples off as anecdotal, but remember, we received so many responses that we couldn't possibly include them all. If hundreds of thousands of people can figure out a way to crush it, isn't it possible that you could too? Isn't it at least worth a try? About the hate mail, and comments for that matter. Yes, there are hateful people out there who are pissed off because they're not doing shit, and you will likely hear from them, especially, as photographer Jared Pullen points out, if you succeed. Don't let them keep you quiet, or as Pullen says, fuck the naysayers. Sometimes it's hard, and some people will get more hurtful or inappropriate feedback than others. Women will have a different experience on social media than most men. Surely, you already know that many, many dudes are scumbuckets. Even more than we thought, now that I can update the audiobook. Then there are the run-of-the-mill insults that can come from anyone. You're ugly. You're stupid. You're not all that. Want to know how the best influencers handle that crap? They ignore it or they confront it. In fact, you probably haven't made it big until you read out loud your hate mail in a post. Hell, Taylor Swift wrote a number one song about it. Misogyny, racism, and bigotry are very real problems, but they are not the reason why you're not crushing it yet. You're the reason that you're not crushing it yet. For real, when the haters come out for you, just shake it the fuck off. You know, they're not crushing it because they've got time to waste spewing poison on you. You should pity them. You should really want to show what you're made of and transform their ignorance into phenomenal content for your fans. Social media and technology haven't made the world any worse than it was before. They don't change us. They expose us. And that's not a bad thing. We're always more effective against the demons we know and can identify than the ones that are hiding in the dark. All of the reasons people throw out to justify why they're not doing what they say they want to do are boiled down to three kinds of fear. Each of them requires a different response. Fear of failure. Well, that's what people say they're afraid of anyway. I think what they're really afraid of is being judged by people whose opinions mean something to them. I'm not going to minimize this. I know it well. I don't give a crap about what people think, and yet there are days that I'll go into ridiculous lengths to turn around someone's negative opinion about me because I care equally about what everybody thinks about me. Believe me, I get it, especially if you're worried about justifying yourself to your family. I have the most supportive family in the world, and even I occasionally get razzed when one of my investments fails or something doesn't go the way I predicted. So I can totally understand how devastating it could be to learn that you've disappointed your mom, earned the scorn of your siblings, or have been dismissed by your closest friends. But you're just going to have to find a way to get over it. Get a shrink, start practicing yoga, find a hypnotist, do whatever it takes to settle your nerves. Embrace the moment and stop caring what other people think. Commit to ignoring every single voice that threatens to undermine you. If it's your mom, find a respectful way to tell her you want her love, but not her opinion. If it's your friends, tell them you are grateful for their concern, but they have to choose to support you or fuck off. The only person you can't ignore is your spouse, if you have one. The way around that is to work with your husband or wife to come up with a plan that will work for both of you. There will always be people around you to tell you not to do things. You have to let yourself be the sole judge and jury. In my experience, good communication solves all things. I advise everyone in this predicament to confront the problem head on. Sit down with the people you care about most and say, "I'm going to do something I should have done ages ago. The only thing that stopped me was my fear of what you'd say, but you need to know that I'm over that now. I don't need your blessing, but I do need to know I have your support when I fail. Because I will. Not spectacularly, I hope, but definitely in the short term. In the long term, though, I'm going to win. And it would mean the world to me to know you've got my back and are hoping for my success, not waiting for my failure." Then, no matter how they respond, start. Just like that. You'll be amazed how quickly you can work when you're no longer tethered to the tyranny of other people's opinions. People who are afraid to fail will always set their goals far lower than they need to, much to the delight of their competitors. No one who has played it safe ever made it big. This is your life, and I promise you, the chances of truly ruining it are slim. Short of self-destructive behavior or complete lack of self-awareness, there is very, very little you can do that you cannot recover from. Be clear-eyed and strategic. Be willing to work harder and longer than you ever have in your life, and you won't disappoint anyone. In fact, I predict you'll surprise everyone.
How I'm Crushing It. Rodrigo Tasca, Tasca Studios. Instagram, @ @DRigo_who. Rodrigo Tasca is not leading the glamorous life. The 31-year-old moved back into his parents' house in Florida to save on rent. He hired his sister to help with his videography business, and his studio was his bedroom. It's a far cry from when he used to live in New York, where he was photographing models and shooting behind-the-scenes videos for magazines. Yet he still thinks he's got it better than some of his friends. In fact, he feels sorry for them. Moving back to Florida was a risk, but I knew that I had to get out of my comfort zone. I wasn't getting any younger, but I was willing to start back at zero and put in the work. I wake up every day and I'm happy with what I'm doing, but then I'm hanging out with some friends and they're just like, God, I hate what I'm doing. Dude, there's no reason why you should be doing something that you hate nowadays. But they're afraid to fail, or they're afraid about what their image will look like. He gets it. It's hard to impress women when you tell them that you're living with your parents. I'm 31 years old, definitely feel like I want to settle down more. But if I meet a girl nowadays, there has to be an understanding. I'm trying to create something bigger here, and I need to make this sacrifice for the next year and a half of my life so I can have a better life and potentially better life for us within the next 5 years. If you're not cool with that, you're not the girl I'm looking for. Rodrigo started out in the restaurant business, first with his family, later working for a large corporation. About 7 years ago, he won a GoPro at a company holiday party raffle. He loved playing around with it and making videos, but had no intention of doing anything else with it until he visited a friend of his living in Peru. The friend was a real estate agent, and one day, when his photographer didn't show up, he asked if Rodrigo could take the pictures instead. He agreed, but then offered to take some videos of the property too. He spent the next 7 months filming and renting real estate properties in Peru. Upon his return to the United States, he moved to New York for a short-lived position at one of his previous employer's new restaurants, then paid the bills by working at a tennis club where he landed his next job as a personal chef for a family in the Hamptons while also freelancing with a catering company. He discovered Crush It when his company cooked for Tech Week 2015, and he heard this Belarusian immigrant tell the story of how he made money as a New Jersey teenager buying Shaq dolls at the dollar store and returning them to Kmart across the street for a full refund. This kind of hustle was familiar to Rodrigo, whose family had moved to the States from Brazil when he was a small child. Money was tight, so when his parents would go to Costco to buy supplies for the restaurant, he'd buy a box of candy bars for $6 or $7 and sell them to his classmates at school for $1 each. He listened to Crush It during his hour-long subway commute from his apartment in Crown Heights to cook for his client's family on the Upper East Side, and it convinced him to follow his passion and start filming. Film school was financially out of the question. He was going to have to learn on the job. He started with his roommates, who were models, and then offered to do a shoot for a clothing company where one of his friends worked. They put the shoot up on their Instagram, and it got so much attention that they invited him to shoot another event. He earned a little money for that gig, but it would be the only one that paid out of the next 10 or so videos he'd create. And that was by design. While taking so many online Udemy classes that the company contacted him to find out why he was consuming so much content so fast, he was offering his services for free to anyone he could find. I'd find someone who was having an event and say, hey, is somebody shooting for you? And if they said no, I'd offer myself up. It was pretty much, what can I do to get my foot in the door? I didn't have the technical skills, but I figured going out and learning and getting the field experience and the opportunity to work with clients was going to benefit me in the long run. So when I was ready to charge somebody, all those skills from the free stuff I was doing would come into play. He had the perfect day job to accommodate his training. The family he worked for in the Hamptons and the Upper East Side would have him work about 40 hours over 2 to 3 days, which left the rest of the week open for him to work on his craft. You have to start building those connections. That's what drove me. At first it could be discouraging, but Rome wasn't built in a day. After about 3 months, he finally got paid $200 to film a behind-the-scenes video for a large publication. Eager to get away from the New York winters, he started researching the Florida market for those types of videos and discovered that there was a void. No one was doing that kind of work down there. He decided he would be the one to create a market for it. So, Rodrigo moved back to Florida in March 2016. things did not go well. In New York, I would find a client and then do the whole project for them, the whole process, shooting a video, editing, and producing. I thought I was going to come back to Florida and be this hotshot from New York, and then I realized that no one cares that I was in New York. It's one of those things. I needed to wake up and realize that the other thing I learned about from Crush It is growing a personal brand. At first, I was like, hey, I'm Rodrigo Tasca from Rodrigo Tasca Productions. And everyone's like, who? And pretty much I got a lot of doors shut on me. But then I changed my brand to Tasca Studios. And then people were willing to set up an appointment to meet me and hear what I had to say and learn that there was a market for small business videos versus behind the scenes for magazines. So changing that brand was like adjusting to the market, realizing that people didn't want to hire just one guy who does it all, unlike New York, where if you're not the one guy who does it all, they're going to find someone else. There are still clients here who have only recently started a Facebook page. Rodrigo is committed to helping his clients learn how to market online, teaching them the basics of Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube marketing, even when they resist at first. His persistence and commitment have paid off. A year ago when I started, we were calling businesses and offering free videos and people were like, no, we're not interested, or no, we don't need it. Compare that to the fact that I now charge clients $1,200 for the day to shoot. I'm going to California. I just got back from Tennessee after shooting at a music festival. It's just so crazy that within 1 year of hard work and hustle, where that has led me. I could move out, but I'm considering staying at my parents' house for another year and then getting an office space. My family is super supportive about what my sister and I are doing. She left her job and works with me full-time now. They're like, whatever we can do to help, we want to see this work out for you guys. I really wouldn't have made it this far without the support of my friends and family.
Fear of wasting time. If you're under the age of 35, this isn't even an issue. You can always go back to the practical world in 24 months if you stink or hate what you're doing. School and the 9-to-5 grind are not going anywhere. It bears mentioning that fear of wasting time has also caused many more established entrepreneurs to miss important opportunities. There are a lot of people who ceded ground on Instagram because they were putting all their energy into Twitter and Facebook. The people who laughed at Snapchat should feel pretty foolish now. And they still should, by the way. A lot of people are going to be like, well, now it kind of collapsed. Sure, but a ton of people built huge audiences and gained huge momentum by addressing Snapchat when it was hot. And by the way, it still has a ton of under 30 individuals on it. Every platform is worth some investment. Of course, not everyone will feel like a good fit, and not every platform will pay off, but you can't know until you spend the time in there. For every Snapchat and Insta where I won, there's a SocialCam where I lost. I can assure you what I learned on SocialCam, and I'm going to go off paper here a little bit, taught me so much. Guys, SocialCam was a platform that was only relevant for 7 months, but it was the first time I learned about native video on mobile. And so then when Vine came out, and then later when Instagram created video, and then when Snapchat, it just was everything. So much of what's happening with me right this second can actually be traced back to SocialCam and Ustream way back in the day. And so it's imperative that you try all of these. People are so scared they'll be wasting time if they try to build a business, even when their time isn't valuable. If you're sacrificing time you could have spent with loved ones or doing something that brings value to your life, or hell, $50,000, then I can see how that might cause you some regrets. But if you're giving up only your downtime, time you would have otherwise spent on Game of Thrones or some video game, how can you say it was wasted? You're literally giving up empty hours in favor of doing something that could fill your life with joy, and you're worried about wasting time? That's bullshit. If you're not 100% happy with your life today, it's never a waste of time to try to do something that could get you there.
How I'm crushing it. Sean O'Shea, The Good Dog. Instagram, at The Good Dog Training. When you're young and your biggest dream is to become a professional musician, you accept that you'll be working low-prestige, highly flexible jobs like bartending and waiting tables to keep you financially afloat until you make it. It goes with the territory. Everyone's got to pay their dues. At 25, even at 30, you're cool with it. At 40, not so much. For 11 years, Sean O'Shea worked as a valet, parking cars at a restaurant, as well as for a company that handled private events for Beverly Hills celebrities. A drummer since the age of 3, he'd played on hit records with artists like Alicia Keys, CeeLo Green, Jennifer Hudson, and Ghostface Killah. Despite being part of some hit tracks, it was the valet work that was paying the bills, not the music. The future was not looking bright, and he was in a bad space. His break came in the form of two demented dogs. Both pound puppies. At 6 months, the Chow Mix, Junior, and Pit Rhodesian, Oakley, were sweet and cute and everything you want in a puppy. But like a lot of dog owners, Sean didn't really know what he was getting into. Puppies require a lot of consistent training and discipline, and Sean admits he did everything wrong. At first, the dogs were just obnoxious and ill-mannered. But by the time they turned 2.5, they were dangerously aggressive and reactive toward other dogs. We were a menace to the neighborhood. They were huge, and if we were at the park and the grass was wet and they saw another dog, they would literally take off and pull me on my ass like I was water skiing, except on my rear across the park. I even ended up on Judge Judy because my dog had gone after another person's dog. He didn't blame the dogs. He knew the failure was his. And he knew that if he was going to keep these animals and protect them, he was going to have to figure out a way to turn things around. He started watching Dog Whisperer with Cesar Millan and studying dog training techniques. He also started doing some deep personal development work. To be honest, I was a pretty good mess. I studied my ass off. Not traditional books, but a lot of personal work to change my belief system, change my values, work on my character, work on everything that I had never really received as a kid or as a young adult. It took a few years, but eventually his methods, known as balanced training technique, turned his dogs into models of good behavior, much to the surprise and relief of the neighbors. The transformation was so remarkable that around 2006 he was able to start a neighborhood dog walking business, supplementing his income as a valet and part-time musician. He became the guy who could take a giant pack of 14 dogs out at one time and make it look easy. Naturally, people started asking him if he could train their dogs too. As a valet and musician, he brought in about $20,000. In his first year of training and walking, he brought in $65,000. That figure doubled the second year. Sean started to feel a new dream coalesce, one that didn't include going on tour with a band. Yet while he had discovered a natural ability to communicate with dogs, he was not a natural business person. I didn't know anything about business. Zero. Like the word brand, the word marketing, I didn't know anything about any of that stuff. He read obsessively to educate himself, however, which is how he came upon Crush It. He followed every word. I dove in pretty naively, started creating a ton of videos, started doing a ton of Facebook. I remember simple conversations with myself. If I was the consumer out there, what would cause me to come back to a Facebook page or a YouTube channel over and over again? And the only answer I could come up with was if it helped improve my life, if it had value in that sense. And that was my guiding light. Even though he wasn't comfortable on camera, he started filming videos with a cheap flip cam. Do-it-yourself videos, a ton of teaching videos, a ton of before and after videos, a ton of showing what we could do, but also teaching people how they could do their own thing. Other trainers were doing the same, but his intense efforts and the fact that he was early to the platforms served to differentiate him and elevate his profile. A lot of trainers at the time, whether in social media or otherwise, were in a kind of chest-beating space, like, I've come out of the womb and I instantly was gifted with this thing. My journey was more like, I fucked everything up, and I was a wreck, and my dogs were a wreck. Here's my journey of how I got out of there. Let me share that with you guys. I was really transparent and doing my very best to try to share the information, the tools, the approach, the techniques, and my own blueprint for how I got out, including personal development stuff and recommended books. I worked obsessively. I studied, trying to understand how to do this right and how to build this because I was so obsessed with doing something special. I finally felt like I found my break. My biggest goal was to do something that had an impact. It sounds cheesy, but that was really where I was at. I think I struggled for so long not feeling that way that when I found the opportunity, I just went kit and caboodle all the way in. I was determined to find my answer, determined to develop, cultivate the skills so I could move forward. And I knew I had a shit ton of catching up to do. I was so far behind. His following grew quickly. He waited until he was overflowing with clients before quitting the valet gig. I'd been there 11 years and everyone was like, "Where do you think you're going?" And I was like, "We got plans." Within a few years, he had built an international profile. He called in from Scotland for an interview for this book after speaking in front of the Scottish Parliament about balanced training and his ideas for regulating the industry. In 2012, he opened a second location in New Orleans. He hired a partner, Laura, who had worked with some big names in Hollywood and could provide the administrative and organizational support he needed, and more trainers to handle the increased demand for his services. Now 49, Sean does very little training himself, except when especially dangerous animals come in, which he takes on until they're safe for his team to work with. People fly their dogs in from all over the country, and trainers travel from all over the world to study with Sean and his team, learning not just training techniques, but how to leverage social media for their businesses. He spends about 6 hours a day creating content and responding to his community. He's also written a book and created DVDs, and he runs a Q&A podcast. There are so many people around the world who can't get to us and can't get to other trainers for help with serious stuff. We're trying to empower people. We get great feedback from people in different countries, and they're sending pictures of their dogs off-leash, fully trained, just by using our free videos. It's really awesome. One thing he hasn't done is product placements. I don't want to cheapen the blog. Not that I wouldn't do it if something amazing came along, and I don't mean monetarily, necessarily. Money would be great, but there are so many cheesy products from people who don't even build relationships. They just send you an email, and they're like, "Hey, would you put this in your blog?" No! He has built the entire business through social media and his personal brand. In 2016, he grossed more than $600,000. Not a moment goes by when he's not thinking about the business. I have a little bit of downtime, but with Instagram stories and Instagram and Facebook and YouTube and responding and training and running the business, there's not a whole lot of extra time, but that's cool for right now. It's what's needed in order to get things to the right space. I'm totally down for it. To be honest, being 40 years old when I started, I don't feel I have time to waste. It's not a desperate thing. It's not a freaked out or panicky thing. It's just, you don't have time, buddy. You wasted a lot of time doing a lot of stuff that didn't serve you. Let's go hard and see what you can make happen in the time you've got.
Fear of seeming vain. When I wrote Crush It in 2009, I got a good amount of grief from critics who accused me of glorifying narcissism. I don't hear much from them anymore because I've been proven right by the customer, aka the market. Developing a strong personal brand leads to business success. Don't worry about seeming vain. Embrace it. Everybody else who is crushing it did. Remember, smart entrepreneurs don't care what other people think. You'll look like an ass for a while if you walk around with a camera constantly pointed at your face, but everyone looks like an ass when trying something new. Reality TV was a joke, remember? Now you can't turn around without seeing a reality star on the cover of a magazine, on a makeup counter, some exercise equipment, or the frozen food package aisle. Everyone's an ass until they're a pioneer. Set your mind to success. The most exciting part of being an entrepreneur today is that we're living in the early years. The pool is crowded, but there's still plenty of room for you. Get in while you can. Look, I'm sympathetic. I didn't learn how to swim until I was 9 years old because I was too scared to put my face underwater. The only reason I finally learned was one day I was playing air hockey at the community pool when I heard my mom clapping and cheering. My younger sister, Liz, had figured out how to swim and was making her way across the pool. I ripped my shirt off, threw myself into the pool, and started swimming before my mom's applause stopped echoing. There was no way I was going to let my sister learn how to swim before me. Sometimes you have to just jump into the pool, even when you're scared. As you gather your ideas and put your strategies into motion, set yourself up emotionally to succeed. Find your courage and strengthen your self-esteem until you're brave enough to make some noise and invite people's attention. Then show them that you care deeply about keeping it. Several of the people interviewed for this book said that while hugely inspiring, Crush It didn't actually compel them to change anything about how they were growing their personal brand or running their business because they couldn't imagine operating any other way. Caring about quality, value, and the customer experience above and beyond anything else was already working for them. We live in such a fast, casual, cynical world that it can be almost disorienting to customers when they are coming into contact with someone else's eagerness to help or please bowls them over like an enthusiastic Saint Bernard. Disorienting, but also delightful and addictive. Crush It merely confirmed what these stellar entrepreneurs already felt deep in their hearts, and it gave them the satisfaction of knowing they were right to follow their instincts. It's very Wizard of Oz, actually. Let me get a little Glinda the Good Witch on you. You've always had the power to achieve your wildest ambitions. There is literally, literally no reason you can't become an entrepreneur and influencer in 2018. It's my greatest hope. And by the way, I know a lot of you are going to be listening to this in 2020 and 2022. It's going to stick there too. The long tail is long. And it's my greatest hope by the end of this book, you'll feel a lot like the 9-year-old me as I hurled myself into the deep end of the pool and realized, oh shit, I can fucking swim.
How I'm crushing it. Mimi Goodwin, Mimi G style. Instagram at Mimi G style. The School of Hard Knocks is a brutal place to get your formative education. Mimi Goodwin should know. Raised in Chicago by a single mother who worked 2 full-time jobs to make ends meet, she often spent time at her grandparents' house, where she was molested at a young age by 2 male family members. When her mother remarried, Mimi was abused by her stepfather. She would find respite every summer in Puerto Rico, where she went to spend time with her father. Her aunt was a seamstress, and Mimi loved to make clothes for her Barbies, while sitting next to her as she sewed ball gowns and wedding dresses. Mimi's father bought her a sewing machine, and she took it back with her to Chicago, where her mother would buy her fabric. When she was 13, Mimi offered to make a dress for her mother to wear to a wedding. The end result was horrible. The dress's hemline was off, and it didn't fit properly. Mimi's mother wore it proudly anyway. Mimi was thrilled, and a seed was planted. Unfortunately, Mimi's home life became intolerable and she ran away, leaving the sewing machine behind. Seeking year-round warmth, she used money she'd stolen from her mother to buy a train ticket to California, where a friend of hers had moved with his family a month before. I thought that all of California was Hollywood. She couldn't understand the conductor over the loudspeaker. I remember the conductor saying, "Something, something, California," so I got off the train. And it ended up leaving me in Pomona. And I was like, this doesn't look anything like the movies. For 8 or 9 months, she lived in a city park, sleeping on a bench or with random people in exchange for money or food. She eventually made her way to her friend's house and moved in. The friend became a boyfriend. She experienced domestic violence there too, and right before her 16th birthday, she found out she was pregnant. Upon hearing she was going to be a grandmother, Mimi's mother came to visit and tried to mend the rift between them. She apologized and I apologized. I think I had a greater understanding for my mom after I became a parent. I found myself in very similar predicaments. Eager to give her daughter Chastity a safer living situation, Mimi moved out of the boyfriend's house, but wound up squatting in an abandoned apartment building with no running water. Her mother begged Mimi to let her take the baby until Mimi could get her life together. Reluctantly, she agreed. Mimi married the first person she could so she could get a house and bring her daughter home. Again, she found herself in an abusive relationship. A second daughter, Lexi, followed in 1998, and Mimi tried to stick it out with her husband. But when Lexi was a few months old, Mimi asked some married friends if she could move in with them. She had a job as a receptionist and soon moved into her own one-bedroom apartment. She was making ends meet, but barely. There were weeks when we would have a lot of potatoes or a lot of top ramen or whatever we could manage at the time. I would come home from work, go right to the bedroom, close the door, and cry. I felt I was drowning in whatever this life was, and the kids would cry, "Mom, Mom, Mom," and I'd collect myself and go back into the kitchen and make dinner and move on, because that's just what you do when you're a mom. Things started looking up. She found a job working as a receptionist at a 3D digital media company for a man named Steve, who mentored her and educated her about his business. She got married again, my healthiest relationship, had two more children, and took up her old hobby, sewing. Her husband turned the garage into a little sewing room for her. She'd wear some of her handmade clothes to the office and always get compliments. Her boss, Steve, who was always the first one to scream across the room, "She made that," would often sit her down to talk about her ambitions and goals. One day, when they were having this conversation, and he was asking yet again what she'd like to do besides be a receptionist, she replied, "I think I'd like to be a fashion designer." "How much would you need?" he asked. They talked further about the steps she would have to take to make her dream come true, and she went home. The next day, she found a $30,000 check on her desk. She started working on a collection and even had a runway show at the Fashion Business Institute in Los Angeles. But she realized soon enough that while she loved designing, she hated the other aspects of the job. Steve didn't get upset. "You'll figure it out," he assured her. In 2012, she noticed that a lot of people were starting sewing blogs and making commercial patterns and crafts at home. She thought, "I can do that." So in March, she started her fashion sewing blog, Mimi G Style. At the time, you could find online instructions to make a quilt or an apron, but there was nowhere to go where you could find out how to make the clothes you saw in magazines. "I would take something I had seen on the runway that, of course, I could not afford, modify it, and create something new." One day, she made a skirt inspired by a piece she had seen from Oscar de la Renta. She posted it on the blog, and people went nuts, begging her to make one for them. Mimi wasn't interested in sewing for hire, so she posted instructions on the blog. The requests persisted, however. Finally, around Christmas time, when she was thinking about gifts for her daughters, she thought, "What if I just take a couple of orders?" So she posted that she would take orders for 24 hours. She priced the skirt high at $198 to keep the number of orders low. And she warned people not to expect to get their skirt for 4 weeks. Then she went to bed. When she woke up the next day, she had thousands of dollars worth of orders. She freaked out, sewed nonstop with her daughters cutting and her husband folding next to her, delivered the skirts, and swore, "Never again." Then she thought, "What if I could just teach them to make it themselves?" She filmed a series of video lessons showing people step by step how to create a garment from scratch based on their body measurements. She created one new video per month, and earnings rose so fast that in 2 years, she was able to quit her job and focus on growing her business. Meanwhile, I was getting all these emails from everywhere in the world, from all these women saying, "I came across your blog and you inspired me to start a new hobby," or, "You're inspiring me to dress better," or, "I just lost my job. I'm going through a divorce. I was thinking of committing suicide," or, "I'm in rehab," and then saying things like, "Somehow your blog has helped me get through." At that moment, I realized that the blog was less about fashion and sewing and really was a vehicle of motivation. A friend who loved business books introduced Mimi to Crush It in 2015. By then, her blog was trucking along, she was developing her own products, and she had started her own line of commercial patterns. She was already using and loving social media, but reading the book showed her that there was still more she could do. Okay, you turned your hobby into a career. It's your passion, you're working hard, but now you need to do more. Now you need to engage more. Now you need to crank up your customer service. Now you need to spend time asking all these questions and making sure that those followers and those fans really engage and become loyal to you. You need to keep building that community. For example, one day Mimi posted that she was going fabric shopping, and someone wrote that she would be willing to fly all the way from Tampa to go fabric shopping with her. I thought that was insane, but I moved the date by 30 days, and people came. And at the end of the day, they asked, "What are we doing next year?" Next year? The next year, she booked a hotel, set up some classes, and about 80 people showed up. In 2017, the Mimi G Style Fashion Sewing and Style Conference celebrated its 6th anniversary. It's followed by thousands of people on Facebook, Instagram, and Mimi's blog. Mimi has worked with about 300 different brands by now, but she says the day she got the call from Project Runway was her greatest moment. They were working on Project Runway Junior, and the kids were going to be using vintage patterns and turning them into a more modern look. They contacted Simplicity because they knew that's what I used, and asked if I could come on the show and be a mentor to the kids and introduce the challenge with Tim Gunn. And so the folks at Simplicity called me and said, "Hey, Project Runway called. They want you to come do the show." And I was like, "What? Yeah, let's do it." When Mimi read Crush It, she was excited to learn that there was a term for the type of business she was running, a reactionary business. She's still at it, looking ahead to see where she should go next. She spotted a big hole and is now in the process of filling it. In the sewing community, I've been able to cross all boundaries. I've been in every sewing magazine that there is. I've been very fortunate, but I'm Latina. And a lot of my community is African American or Latino. And when I looked in those sewing magazines, there's nobody that represents us. I got to a point where I really wanted to see more of myself in these magazines. And I thought, well, I'll just do it myself. We launched So So Deaf, a digital multicultural sewing magazine that focuses on both men and women and will feature a lot of makers from all walks of life. As soon as we launched it, it got a lot of amazing reviews. People were posting and sharing it because there wasn't anything like that. And for me, I think that the more people I help, the more I get back. I've been very fortunate that I get to work with all these brands, but not a lot of makers do, especially those who look like me. I know that there are so many because they follow me and I follow them and see their work. If I can bring awareness to them and get more of the brands that I work with to have a better representation of the entire sewing community, not just a part of the community, then I've done my job.
5. The only thing you need to give yourself to crush it. Permission. And for all of you listening to this book right now, all of you know number 5 is my favorite number, and that is why I recalled my favorite part of my first book, Crush It, the one-word chapter. The answer to this simple chapter is permission. And I printed in the book, GaryVaynerchuk.com/permission. I implore all of you to go to that URL and get the in-depth rationale behind this, but on a quick rant, most of you need permission to go out and do it. Everything about this book, everything about your life, one of the things that I've clearly brought to the table in social media, in modern communication, is a personality that has resonated to give people permission to go, and they blame me. I love doing that for you. Please go to the URL, GaryVaynerchuk.com/permission. I enjoyed this chapter very much.
How I'm Crushing It. Pat Flynn, Smart Passive Income. Instagram, @PatFlynn. Pat Flynn had planned to be an architect since the days when he was a straight-A high school student. After graduating magna cum laude from UC Berkeley, he quickly landed a job with a renowned architectural firm in the Bay Area, where he became one of the youngest people ever to become job captain. His future bright, his 401k growing, he proposed to his girlfriend, who said yes. It was March 2008. You know what happened next. 3 months later, Pat lost his job along with 2.5 million other people in the country that year. It was a huge blow. Pat had even gone the extra mile to become accredited in leadership in energy and environmental design, LEED, a professional credential that proves mastery in the highly specialized area of green building. The LEED AP exam is so rigorous, it has only about a 30% pass rate. His bosses had assured him that the certification would look good on his resume and factor favorably into his annual reviews. Eager to impress people and differentiate himself from the competition, Pat studied during much of 2007 and the early months of 2008 to prepare for the test. Overwhelmed by the mountain of material, the reference guide alone was more than 400 pages, he created a website to keep himself organized and make it easy for him to cross-link and access his resources and notes from wherever he happened to be because he traveled so much for work. He took the exam in March 2008 and passed with high marks. That's when he got promoted to job captain. Because he was in that role, he was given a few months to wrap up his projects before his job ended. That bought him a little time to shrink his expenses and get ready to live extra lean. He and his fiancée moved back in with their respective parents, and Pat started calling everyone he knew in the industry and every contractor or mechanical firm he'd ever worked with through his employer to beg for a job. No one was hiring. A fat lot of good all that studying had done him. A vague sense of depression started to settle in. In the meantime, he still had to show up for work. Normally, he listened to his music playlist during his morning commute. He was taking the train, which was cheaper than driving, but one day he got bored with it and started poking around the podcast selections. He stumbled upon the Internet Business Mastery Show, hosted by Jeremy Franson and Jason Van Orden. That day, they were interviewing someone who was making six figures a year helping people pass something called a project management exam. Pat thought about his website. Aside from sharing it with a few coworkers, once he passed the exam in early 2008, he'd mostly forgotten about it. He thought, I've passed the LEED exam. Maybe I could create something people could use. So he went to his site. Still not sure how he was going to monetize it, he installed some traffic analytics to prepare for whatever marketing he figured he'd eventually come up with. It didn't take him long to see that thousands of people were visiting to help themselves to the information already there. He activated the comments section, and sure enough, people started asking questions. He knew the answers. While interacting with his visitors, he started spending hours engaging with people in other architecture, LEED, and sustainable building forums, leaving trails to bring them back to his website. At the end of July, he added Google AdSense to his website. By the end of the first day that the site was Google Ad-enabled, he had earned $1.18. It was the most incredible feeling ever. This could actually work. Obviously, you could find that amount of money in the couch cushions, and I couldn't live off $1.18 per day, but it was a sign to me to keep trying. Who else out there is doing this thing, and where can I get some advice? The hosts of the podcast that had inspired Pat to monetize his website had launched a formal mastermind program as outlined in Napoleon Hill's 1937 self-help classic, Think and Grow Rich, to help walk people through the steps of building an online business. One of the founders moved to San Diego, where Pat was living with his parents, and agreed to host an in-person group meeting where people could talk about their process. Pat decided to join them, meeting at a Panera Bread not far from his parents' house. I felt I had nothing to add, nothing to contribute. I just wanted to be a fly on the wall and listen. And then everybody was introducing themselves and talking about what they had going on, and I was so impressed. It was really inspiring. It was also really intimidating, and as it came close to being his turn to talk, he got so nervous that he started sweating and having trouble breathing. They asked him to explain what he was up to, and he told them that he'd just gotten laid off, but he had a website that helped people pass the LEED exam. They had no idea what that was, and I'm like, yeah, see, nobody knows about this. This isn't going to work out very well. And they said, well, that sounds interesting and very niche. What's your traffic like? I said, you know, a couple thousand people. That's pretty good, you know, 2,000 people a month. You could work with that. And I was like, no, 2,000 a day. What? They were stunned. You're not monetizing this? You don't have an ebook? And I said, I don't know what that means. The group spent the next 30 minutes explaining to Pat what he could and should do. It took about a month and a half of working day and night for Pat to write his ebook, which was a compilation of much of the same information that was on the website, but better organized and easier to read, complete with charts. His mentor explained what tools he could use to turn it into a PDF and sell it online. He used one called eJunkie. He put a graphic on the sidebar of the site, a PayPal button, and a little description of the book, which he priced at $19.99. At this point, he was a week and a half away from joblessness. His sole comfort was knowing that if this didn't work, and he was pretty sure it wouldn't, his parents had promised they wouldn't kick him out. It was 2 a.m. when he went live. Pat went to bed, and when he woke up 4 hours later to get ready for work, he checked to see if he had gotten any sales. Nothing. I thought, God, this is worthless. I wasted all that time, and then I gave myself an out. It was still early. Nobody was buying study guides at 3 a.m. So he took the train to work, arriving around 8:30 a.m. He checked his emails. Nothing. I was starting to despair. And then 15 minutes later, I got a notification of payment received for $19.99 minus the fee to PayPal. It was the coolest email I ever received. Then, immediately after the rush, I started thinking, crap, what if he returns it? What if he doesn't like it? What if he sues me because the information is wrong? All this negative stuff that most people feel when they do something outside their comfort zone. So I go outside for a walk because I'm hyperventilating, and I come back 15 minutes later and there's another email from PayPal saying that I had made a sale. So even when I was out on a walk, I was making another sale. And that just blew my mind. Like, holy crap, this thing is now available to people 24/7, 365. And I don't have to be there in order to actually make the transaction happen. Between the book and the ads on my site, I ended up generating $7,908.55 that month, which was 2.5 times more than my architecture income. There were a few ups and downs, but from that day on, for the most part, Pat's income grew month after month. He became known as a lead expert because no one else was providing the help people were seeking. All that work he had put into the website was paying off. By March 2009, he was bringing in $25,000 to $35,000 per month. Along with questions about the lead exam, Pat started getting requests for information about how he had built his site and business. He remembered all the business gurus he'd looked up, the sites he'd explored, and the newsletters he'd subscribed to when he was trying to figure out how to get started himself. He recalled how he'd felt that they were doing a bait and switch, luring him in with big promises, but ultimately delivering very little useful information. I wanted someone to be upfront and honest with me, but I felt they just wanted my money. So he launched smartpassiveincome.com, a site where he could document everything he had learned about starting an online business. Two things happened that made him realize that these websites were not destined to be temporary income generators to keep him afloat until he could get his architecture career back on track. The first thing was a phone call. About 2 months after Pat launched smartpassiveincome.com, his old boss got in touch. He had been let go from the prominent architecture firm as well and had started his own company. He'd invited a number of Pat's old colleagues to join him, and he wanted Pat to come work for him too. He offered a higher salary than Pat had been earning at the old firm, a private office, and a year's rent. All Pat had to do was move back to Irvine and pick up where he left off. It didn't take me more than 2 or 3 seconds to say, no, thank you. And when I hung up, I thought about his offer and was very surprised that I had answered so quickly. Why? It was a sign that this was the direction I wanted to go, and I needed to really own it. I wanted to become an entrepreneur. The second thing was that he discovered Crush It, which helped him come to terms with what had to happen next. The book says, if you want to make money selling worms, do it and own it and be that guy. The lead exam stuff? Those were my worms. I was that guy. It wasn't just reading the text of Crush It that influenced how Pat ran his business. Visiting the book's Amazon page, Pat noticed something else. Gary was actually replying to the occasional negative reviewer and saying, "Hey, I'm sorry this book didn't speak to you. Let's get on the phone and chat." I couldn't believe that an author was paying attention, responding to comments, and offering a phone or Skype number. Many of the one- or two-star reviewers came back with a follow-up comment. They might not have changed their opinion, but they'd say, "Gary, I still don't agree with you, but I so appreciate the time you took to reach out to me and understand where I was coming from." That impressed me more than even the content of the book itself. Where is the ROI in responding to a one-star comment? I saw that A, he took the time, B, he cared enough to reach out, and C, he cared to see what he could do to improve. After that, Pat adopted the same response strategy to any negative comments he received, and the ROI has been clear. Sometimes those people with whom I've talked on calls just misunderstood something I said and have gone on to become some of my biggest fans. Right around this time, Pat's earnings show a striking upward inflection point. I'm not saying that Crush It was the sole reason why I was able to grow my income to what it is now, but I went bigger, that's for sure. I started to produce more things instead of being just a blogger. I started to look for other ways to expand beyond my realm of comfort. And expand he did. He started a YouTube channel in 2009. In 2010, he launched the Smart Passive Income podcast, which has seen more than 40 million downloads. In 2011, he started accepting offers to speak. To provide a space to answer the deluge of questions he gets from his followers, he then created a daily Ask Pat podcast, as well as a few others to address niche subjects. His self-published book was a Wall Street Journal bestseller. All along, he followed through on his commitment of being a crash test dummy for online business development. He started creating new businesses live in front of people, like a site for people interested in starting food trucks and one for people interested in becoming security guards, and posting his revenue for those too. If he made a mistake, he made it in public. He detailed every step of the process along the way. In the end, Pat's passion for architecture and design was surpassed by his passion for helping others. I'm getting emails from people, paragraphs long, thanking me for helping them save time and effort or for helping them get a promotion. I've gotten handwritten letters from people I've helped pass the exam. The interesting thing is that in October 2009, I asked people why they had bought the ebook from me. I thought the information would be useful so I could continue to do whatever it was they were going to tell me was working. About a quarter of those who responded said things like, "Pat." That was another cool thing. They were calling me by name, as if they knew me. "Pat, I bought from you because you finally gave me an opportunity to pay you back. I didn't even need the book. I've already passed the exam. But you provided me so much information, I felt I needed a way to give back to you." I eventually learned that this reciprocity is human nature, and I was setting up systems for that kind of interaction and transaction. The great thing about Pat's success is how many options it affords him. He has been expanding his philanthropic reach, and he serves on the board of an educational nonprofit. He's interested in getting involved in shaping education policy. Despite his belief in Crush It, he isn't trying to be another Gary Vee. I am who I am, and he is who he is. That's what Crush It is also about, you know, being confident in who you are, not trying to be like somebody else. When you really own it, and you put yourself out there and be you, your vibe is going to attract your tribe, and you're going to be able to make change in this world. Pat's story is waiting to be told a thousand more times. I know many of you have niche expertise, yet you don't think it could possibly be a real business. But come on! I mean, the lead exam? Are you kidding me? If Pat Flynn can make a stellar income off a website dedicated to helping people pass an exam only a few people in the country have ever heard of, you can do it with soccer trivia or smoothies. Please dig deep into what you know best or what you love most, or better yet, what you know best and love most, and start creating content. Follow the blueprint Pat's story provides. Go deep, go niche, and provide real value in the form of entertainment or information. though it may seem that over the years, influencers have had their pick of thousands of platforms they could use to establish their brands, you need only both hands and a few toes to count the number that actually had the ability to grow big enough.